I'm here with my colleague, Dana Wolf-Hughes from the NIH. And we're going to talk to you about smart health and biomedical research in the era of artificial intelligence and advanced data science, also known as SCH. This is NSF 21530, and we're going to give you more information on this, and we're going to also have time to ask questions. I will say that in your screen, you should see you have a Q&A area. You can ask questions during this, and my colleagues at NSF will be answering. So what I'm going to do is introduce my colleagues now. I'm going to start with Goli Amini, who is central to the program. She's not one of our program staff, but she is central to this. She is currently a AAAS fellow. The next person I'm going to introduce is Scott Acton. He's from our SCI's CCF program. Balakrishnan Prabha Bakaran, and he's in SCI's IIS. I don't know if Faye is here. Faye Cobb-Payton will be with us at some point, and she's our SCI's CNS representative. My colleague, Wei Ding from SCI's IIS is here. Georgia Ann Klucke is our colleague from engineering and CMMI. She is not able to join us today, but sends her good wishes. Tanya Koroleski from SCI's IAS, I don't believe will be here today, but she also sends her good wishes. Sylvia Spengler from SCI's IAS will be joining us shortly. Betty Teller, who's from the NSF SBE BCS program, may be joining us. Albert Wang from the Engineering ECCS program should be joining us shortly. Judy Wang from our MPS DMS is on the line with us now. And John Zhang from Engineering ECCS will also be with us. Dana?
Yes, and so as Wendy said, I'm Dana Wolf-Hughes, and I am at NIH in the Office of Behavioral and Social Sciences Research. And historically, we've led this initiative out of NIH along with our NSF colleagues. But this year, we've expanded the participation across the NIH ICs, and in particular, are working closely with our colleagues in the Office of Data Science Strategy. So on the slide, I'm not going to name off everybody, but we have 21 institute centers and offices at the NIH who are now participating, and a lot of my colleagues are on the call today. While this will focus a lot on the solicitation that's posted on the NSF site that Wendy just mentioned, there is also an accompanying notice that is the link below, which is notice-OD-21-011. And that lists out for each of these participating institutes and centers and offices what their specific priorities are as it pertains to smart and connected health. What we do ask, though, is that before coming to one of these program officers listed here about your proposal, to start off on the NSF side to determine whether or not the application fits within the scope of the program and what NSF looks for, given that the applications are received by them and reviewed on the NSF side as well. Next slide.
So you might ask why is NSF and NIH coming together for the smart health program? And there's many reasons, and we've seen computing and engineering and mathematics and social behavioral sciences really transforming the world. We haven't seen that in health in the same ways. So, I mean, this is a study from 2013 in the Institute of Medicine. When you looked at the U.S. compared to the other Western peers, the U.S. was doing poorly. And if you look at non-communicable diseases, if you look at communicable, this is pre-COVID. I think you can see we were really struggling. And so the goal of this initiative, in part, is to try to bring some of the transformation we've seen in other areas to the area of health. And the important thing is here with children, children are, the disadvantages that we see for adults are also in children. So the U.S. has the highest probability of a child dying before age five of any of the peer countries. So if you weren't convinced, there's really important reasons why bringing some of the technology we've seen in other areas to health is critical. Dina?
Yes, and just to build off of what Wendy was saying, we also know too that half of the premature deaths in the US are preventable. So if you look at the graph below, tobacco, so smoking, as well as diet, physical activity, and inactivity patterns are really impeding our progress for reducing early deaths. Next slide.
So, this is just some basic information. We'll be telling you more as we go, but to keep in mind, this is a cross-cutting program supported from multiple directorates in NSF and multiple institutes and centers and offices at the National Institute of Health. All proposals are due on February 16th, 2021 at 5 p.m. in your local time. Late proposals are not accepted. Unless there's an extraordinary event, fires, tornadoes, those kind of things, but plan on having your proposal in on time, which usually means submitting, getting everything ready early. It's important to note there is one mechanism for this. These are all integrative projects, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. They are all $1.2 million in total costs for up to 4 years. They are interdisciplinary teams, which we'll talk about more at length, and we have to make a contribution to fundamental science from at least two NSF sciences. And I think what's important is, and this is a case of use-inspired basic research. And this is Pastor's Quadrant. For those of you that haven't looked at it, Don Stokes created this understanding as a way to think about use-inspired basic research. And many of you, when you think about NSF, will think about Niels Bohr, basic fundamental physics. And yes, we do that, and we're very proud of that. But what's important to note is Louis Pasteur was a microbiologist who did fundamental science. But he also was concerned about the outcomes in his community. So I think what you can think of as Louis Pasteur is in the smart health quadrant. Now, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with being Steve Jobs, who took a lot of the fundamental science, especially that NSF and other government agents had funded, and created applications out of that science. That's important, but that's not what we're looking for in smart health. What we're looking for is fundamental advances in science that really address smart health issues. So smart health and biomedical issues. So our goals here, again, like we started with, these are transformative, high risk, high reward advances. We're looking for advances in computer and information science, engineering, mathematics, statistics, behavioral or cognitive science. And we're really trying to make sure that we're answering pressing questions in the biomedical and public health communities. So what we're looking for is that there's a research gap. So when you're thinking about your problem, think about what is in the fundamental sciences, what gaps are you filling? And in fundamental sciences and engineering, what gaps are you filling? Where is there a gap that can't be? It's not just we can do this science, but we've never applied it to this problem before. But the science that we have doesn't work in this problem. You have to have a key health or biomedical problem. So that gets to the team, having an appropriate research expertise in the major areas involved in the work. Now, we often get a question is, do you need a clinician on these? No, you need the appropriate research expertise. That can be somebody who's from biology, from public health. It can be a clinical researcher, but what you want is somebody who knows the research expertise, who knows the research literature in the area that you're doing, to bring that knowledge to your team. And remember, we're looking at this as something that doesn't duplicate other efforts, but it complements those. So if it can go to another program, you should really question whether it should come to Smart Health. This really is a unique program where we're crossing boundaries.
So in terms of smart health research for this iteration, what you'll see here is there are seven different areas, and these are the themes that are outlined in the solicitation. And the NIH notice has specifics related to each IC within these themes. However, while these are broad themes that we are outlining here for the solicitation's purpose, that does not mean that your idea necessarily would have to fall into these. So if it does fall outside of this realm, that is applicable and you can potentially apply, but again, recommend you talking first to the NSF program officers about your proposal. Next slide. So information infrastructure is one of these themes. We have broken that out into sort of three sub buckets. So scalable and interoperable systems. So this could be scalable digital infrastructure, languages, tools, fair data sharing and use, enhanced knowledge representation, such as ontologies, and ensuring high confidence, security, and privacy. So this could be methods for controlling and maintaining data integrity and security and privacy, providing trustworthy patient identification and authentication services as well. Next slide. Another theme that we have outlined is transformative data science. So this could be fusion and analysis and different computational approaches to do that, different visualization and modeling, as well as visual, behavioral, and contextual related data science research. Next slide.
And I just want to say, well, we're emphasizing artificial intelligence here. Not all programs, not all proposals will focus on artificial intelligence. If you think broadly about that as the role of innovative analytics, it will come in many places, including the novel multimodal sensor systems. Again, we're looking for integrated sensor systems, not multiple small sensors, but an integrated system. That can do interrogating multiple system states. These should be adjustable, just in time, implantable, wearable, or mobile. So they can monitor biomarkers through various mechanisms. And again, we would like multimodal. So it isn't just different kinds of electrochemical signals, but they could be biochemical, magnetic, acoustic, electrical, all sorts of different ways, but bringing them together into a system so we could integrate that data. And then using sensor data to inform the development of innovative AI, machine learning, math, and statistics approach to build predictive models. We also have a thrust that's on effective usability. We can create the best technologies around, but if it isn't user and context centered, it won't help us into getting into a new place. So, thinking about the user, thinking about the context, it won't help me if I get a message right now that says I should take a walk, not during a webinar. So I need to know the context and I need this to approach the person in a way. So I want to reduce burden and also increase autonomy. We also want to be able to address diverse users and effectively support users across different socioeconomic status. Think about digital, think about in broadband and communities without broadband, communities with different levels of health literacy, gender, ethnicity. You can think of in many ways that these are diverse users, but it's important that those are considered as we think about usability. Automating health, if you think about closed loop systems, closed loop systems are really important. And can we think about these in these mission critical systems? So they're closed loop, human in the loop. We know it's been hard to automate health. Can we put a new human in the loop? These are training controls that can automatically do your analysis, set it up that your system is triggered to do specific things at specific times. You can also automate these systems for novel simulation and modeling. This is important for many reasons, for discovery, for all sorts of things, but also enhancing digital clinical trials. And we're also looking for generalizable platforms. Again, this is all foundational science, but can we use them across a range of settings, not just here's what we'll do with this group in this place. But if you think about some of the great advances in technology, it's because you could use them across settings. We think about medical image interpretation. We've looked a lot at how AI could do this, but we've looked less at how human pattern recognition, visual searches, perceptual learning, attentional biases, things like that can really affect how observers are understanding images. So we really want to understand the context when you're doing an image analysis or when you're looking at an image, what kind of things affect it, both in the context and the environment, including the human's own environment, but also ways to exploit this understanding. Can we do a better job at providing images in a way that they help perceptual decision-making? And this could be in 3D or 4D models.
And then also too, another theme that is not mutually exclusive to the other ones is unpacking health disparities. And like Wendy mentioned before, just like some of the other themes, this is not limiting proposals to just the AI area, but can also be more broad within the mobile health and digital health space. But within unpacking health disparities, this is really more focused on ways to reduce, assess, and mitigate those disparities, whether that's using data-driven approaches and models to address issues with like social determinants of health, strategies to measure and reduce and or mitigate the effects of racism, bias, and looking at their impacts on health outcomes, as well as novel methods to distinguish between the complex pathways between and or among levels of influence and domains. Next slide. So the review process for Smart Connected Health, the applications will come in to NSF, and then there is a joint NSF-NIH set of review panels that are held, and those are open to the NSF program directors, as well as there is an NIH scientific review officer that attends, and the applications are scored within the scoring system for both agencies. So it will receive both a NSF score as well as an NIH score. The reviews and summaries are released back to PIs and made available on both the NSF and the NIH side. At that point, there is a set of internal discussions that occur. At that time, NIH may make selections of applications to come over to different institutes and centers on the NIH side. If your proposal is selected as one that NIH would like to fund, the PIs will be contacted directly and asked to submit your application in the NIH form, and you will work closely with one of the program officers involved on the NIH side to make those changes in a timely fashion. And then award recommendations are made on both sides and the applications are then funded. Next slide.
One thing I do want to add to this slide too is all the PIs will get the NSF reviews and summaries. They do not get NIH scores. Those are not added unless a proposal is going over to NIH. So our NSF merit review elements, these are the standard information that we have that were set up by the National Science Board. And what's important is for NSF, the intellectual merit and broader impacts are the same criteria, and you should consider them in a top-down way. But our primary criteria here is what's the potential for the proposed activity to advance knowledge and understanding within its own field or across different fields? And what is the benefit to society or advanced desired societal outcome, which is the broader impacts? These two are key to how we look at these proposals. And I think we've implied it, but I do want to say, in this initiative, NIH and NSF are looking for the same thing. We're looking for these advances in foundational science. We're also looking at what are the proposed activities, you know, what's creative, original, and potentially transformative? Is there a good plan for this? Is it the right team? Do they have institutional support? Are there resources available to the PI and the team that would help them have a really great and transformative proposal? Broader impacts are important. They're implicit. This, you know, when you're publishing at the top conferences, that's critical to sharing knowledge. There's explicit when we have technology transfer, you're doing results and disseminating. But also what's really important here is broader impacts include research and education. So what about development of curricula, supporting materials, student involvement in emerging research and technology, postdoctoral training? If someone is going to include a postdoc in their program, they need to have a plan, not just what they're doing, but how are they going to develop that postdoc into an independent researcher? And then the data management plan is required, as in all NSF proposals. We're also looking for broadening participation of underrepresented groups. Smart Health is an excellent way to broaden participation because you will find that students that were not necessarily interested in some scientific areas are really interested in these issues that approach their community. So it's been a wonderful area to see that broadening participation happen. So our review criteria also includes our scientific requirement, our collaboration management plan, and the evaluation plan. And the science areas, I think this is important. We realize that there are every discipline calls their area science or engineering area. When we're talking about science and engineering, we are talking about the NSF areas, so computer and information science, many different areas, database, artificial intelligence, informatics, machine learning. In engineering, we have sensor technology, signal processing, which also in computing, optimization, operations research, closed loop systems, dynamic systems, all sorts of different ways. In mathematics and statistics, again, these all work in important ways together and strengthen each other. Math and statistics and stochastic modeling, analysis, interpretation, characterizing uncertainty. There's others that are there too. And then the social, behavioral, and cognitive sciences. There's areas like perception, social psychology, cognition, emotion. But there's also some of the social sciences of economics, ethics, and then linguistics. So I think that this is important that when we talk about two fundamental science or engineering areas, we're talking about two out of the NSF science areas.
As Wendy mentioned earlier as well, your proposals will have to include a collaboration plan. And it will be a supplementary document that is no more than 2 pages. The plan must include a description of the team and their roles, a plan for integration and ways to support that collaboration, and the team members' individual expertise for the project. And really, this is important to make sure that you are describing how your team is going to be working together and how the individual expertises of those on your team are fitting together to help address your proposal. And so, for example, you know, if you have two sites across the US, you should include information about how you plan to collaborate. Will you do Zoom calls? Are you going to meet up at different conferences? How are you going to actually share knowledge and work together on this? And as Wendy mentioned before, but I will just reiterate this again, the expertise that you have on your project should make sense. You don't need to have necessarily a clinician, but you do need to have people who fill the requisite scientific expertise for your proposals. Next slide.
So all proposals also have an evaluation component. It's important to note at NSF, we do not require preliminary data. That is not a requirement. Part of your proposal, part of your collaboration plan will convince the panel that even without preliminary data, that you have the skills and ability to do this. The evaluation will help people understand how you're going to evaluate it. So you can have technical functioning. If you're using millimeter wave to assess something, or you're using it signal processing to understand in something, you could say, is what I'm doing what I think it is? Is it valid? Is it actually measuring what I think it is? Is it reliable? Is it consistently measuring these things? If you're doing it with users, is it usable? You might pilot this and let some people use your technology. So let's say you were creating a new equipment. You might have the users of that equipment trying it. Also, if you're doing something that you think will have a biomedical or health outcome, you want to do some of those things. Now, remember, evaluation doesn't include randomized clinical trials in this initiative. We know that some of the new guidance from NIH on clinical trials includes many different things. What we're talking about here is randomized trials where we have a control group and a treatment group, and they are randomized. These are early stage proposals. They are not ready for a randomized clinical trial, and the expense and the risks that are associated with it. So just a few additional comments. What kind of things are not appropriate for this solicitation? If you are focusing on biological, biomedical, or public health research, and you do not have fundamental science, so often I get an email that says, I'd like to do research drawing data out of the EHR. We're going to be using test data out of the EHR to do predictions of health outcomes. There's a lot of research now that would allow us to do that. It may not be directly there, but what we were looking for is there something new that you're doing? Are there new ways that you're looking at your analytics? If you're sensing, is it new ways your multimodal sensor system will be approaching a problem? Really what you're doing is that fundamental science and engineering is really advancing there. The other thing is if you're saying nobody's applied this thus far, if there's a reason why you would think it wouldn't work, and you have to create a new system, a new algorithm, if you're looking at how people are perceiving images, you can't say people perceive all these other images in this way, and we understand how people perceive things, but when it comes to medical images, we think we don't understand it there. You'd really want to know more about why that medical was different, why that knowledge was going to be in a very different way than it was before. Also, we're not looking for topics that fit the mission of another agency. So again, if it's a topic that is driven by a health question where the advances are for health, then it should be going to NIH directly. I think if you have a question about this, these are great questions to ask program officers.
And no conversation these days would be complete without mentioning what's going on with the pandemic and COVID-19. And I know that Wendy and my NSF colleagues, as well as my NIH colleagues, have gotten a lot of questions about the applicability of proposals coming in addressing COVID-19. And while you could submit to Smart Connected Health with a proposal that's within that area, you really need to make sure that what it is that you're going to be proposing to do is timely, given the rapid nature of the response to this and the duration of a four-year award. And again, focusing on that fundamental scientific contribution needs to be of utmost priority for this. And also, I'll just say, while you could submit specifically to with an idea as for COVID, and the solution is addressing some sort of aspect of the COVID-19 response. It may be, given the timeline, better to couch some of this within a broader pandemic response or infectious disease response and not necessarily tie it to this use case. Next slide.
So you're going to want to know, where do you get feedback on your proposal? And you send an email to sch-correspondence@nsf.gov of your idea. Send no more than one page. Don't call everybody. It's hard to get good feedback on the fly. So please send us a one pager that briefly describes what project you're trying to do. Sorry, what's the problem? What are you doing? The intellectual merit. That's the scientific advances you expect to make in fundamental science and engineering, and then the broader impacts. If you send the one pager, we can give you much better feedback. We can also schedule times to talk to you about this if we feel like this is not going to get you an answer through an email. But again, don't call, send an email with a summary. I often get people that email and say, I have a whole bunch of ideas that I want to talk to you about. We can't give you good information if you're asking us about a whole bunch of things on the fly. My colleagues and I talk to each other all the time. I might send an email to my colleague, Scott or Wei Ding or somebody else and say, here, I got this proposal. What do you think? This is in your area, not mine. Sending that one pager gets you much, much better feedback. So how do you apply? If you look at our website for NSF, it's 21-530. You will read all the instructions on applying. Please make sure you read the instructions. If you don't read the instructions, proposals can be returned without review, and we hate to do that. For NIH, please look at the guide that Dana mentioned. It's an important document there. It tells you some of the priorities at NIH. Also look at the NSF proposals and award policies and procedures guide. That is your best friend when you're applying. And remember, you can always send an email to the sch-correspondence@nsf.gov. That will give there's a whole group of us that will do that. Do not send individual emails to a group. You will get many different answers from us. We work much better as the Smart Health team. Please feel free to join our listserv. We put out information all the time. We also put out requests to look for panelists for these. So please feel free to sign up for our listserv. And we will be posting these slides afterwards. Also, feel free to look at the NSF website. I always get people asking me questions about Smart Health, and it's very clear they haven't looked at the awards that have been made thus far, because many of the questions would be answered. If you looked at awards, you would say, oh, they are interested in that. So there's many, many things that will be of interest in the NSF website.
And just to wrap up, really, this is not a race, this is a relay, and between basic and applied science. And again, just, you really need to focus on putting together the team that takes the idea across the finish line from start to end.
So with that, we will go to our question and answer section. I know my colleagues are here. I do want to say I apologize to my colleague Steve Breckler from SBE and the BCS division, because I believe I missed him in my introduction. So we have wonderful colleagues here from both NIH and NSF. So my colleague Goli Amini will moderate our questions section, and stop sharing and we'll go on the screen. We can answer from the team, because I think there's an amazing team here. So, Goli?
Yes. Hi again. So our panelists have been answering questions throughout the presentation. So a lot of the questions have been getting answers, but if you have questions that you would want to, you know, present to them, please put them in the Q&A, and I'll read them out loud so our panelists could answer. There are a few that I'm trying to just catch, some that haven't been answered between everybody's questions. There are a few questions about the length of the project, budgetary, and some dynamics between NIH and NSF, and I can present those and then talk about some of the scientific ones. For example, some people are asking, is a project required to be 4 years or can it be shorter? And also, if a project is selected by an NIH, can the budget be increased? If anybody wants to answer those, or I can move on to other questions.
Well, I'll take it.
Sure.
I'll take it. Sorry for the lack of a camera. A project can be less than 4 years, but you want to think about how you're going to design for impact and have time to actually provide for evaluation. The other question, and once the budget goes to NIH, it does not get changed.
Can the teams include international partners, and what is a rough estimate of team size that would two be enough?
So maybe I'll pick that one up. Oh, Sylvia, would you like to go?
I'll start. you may have international partners. They cannot be the lead, so that you would have to, NSF has some fairly strict rules about where people can come from. A team can be as few as two people. But the reality is the breadth of the science that we're asking you to address and the different skill sets often mean that you need a third or a fourth person involved. And I'm talking about leadership. I'm not talking about students, et cetera.
And I'll just add to Sylvia too, that some analyses that we've done on the NIH side, it's about an average of three PIs listed per proposal, so as an average of what's been funded in the past.
And there can be an international component, but you have to justify your international component. It can't be, it generally is not a project all in another country, but it can have international components, but it has to be justified of why, what we're learning for the US in that other country. So be aware that people will be looking at it through that lens.
Speaking of collaborations, there have been a few questions about whether partnerships or collaborations can be formed with companies developing technologies.
So maybe I deal with most of the companies. So you can have a subaward and a proposal to a company. That's not unusual, and it may be a good way to get the science out into the community, but all of the applicants have to be academic institutions or nonprofits, so a company cannot lead. I will also say, if you're partnering with a company, I would make sure that your intellectual merit isn't all in the company, because that will often require them to keep secrets because of their technology. That makes it very hard for a panel to be able to assess what exactly is happening in a proposal. So having a commercial partner is fine, but you may not want it to be the primary driver of what you're doing.
Some of other questions are about partnerships between with medical teams. Can half the partnership, half the team be on the medical side? And
this is research. It's an intellectual question. We're more concerned about what the contributions of the participants are, rather than what kind of institution they particularly, whether they're in a medical institution or a research foundation or in academia. We're less worried about that than we are about the innovation in the question, the interrelationship across the sciences and the advances there, and how you will evaluate it.
This question is a follow-up to Wendy's answer. It's like, what if the company is committed to open source principles?
That helps. That definitely helps.
Can national labs be leads or partners?
So national labs can be leads. A national lab cannot receive salary. The government doesn't pay for what the government's already paid for. If you are at a national lab, I suggest you contact me, reach out directly, and we can work through the logistics of how it is. We value our colleagues very much at our national labs, but we also would like to make sure that it works correctly. So please reach out and we'll work that out on a case-by-case basis.
There have also been some questions that keep coming up about the timeline, the date of the the due date for the proposals that are listed, and then approximately how long the review process takes. So if you guys could just touch up on that.
NSF is committed in normal times to responding to more than 80% of the applicants within a 6-month period. We generally get most of the awards done within that 6-month period. We certainly aim to get the declines done, but not all of the awards can happen within 6 months of the date of submission, but it's certainly more than 80%, actually usually more than 95%.
And I'll say too, so as a reminder for everybody, the proposals are due on February 16th, and I believe Wendy said 5 p.m. Local time of where you are submitting from. In terms of on the NIH side, if your application is selected for funding, it usually takes a little bit longer than what Sylvia mentioned. And so from date of submission, probably no more than 9 months, probably about 8. It will most likely go to, for this round, it to a council in the fall and then be funded shortly thereafter.
A few questions about PI experience. Can the lead PI be an assistant professor? And is there any kind of positive for new PIs?
I think, Scott, why don't you answer that one? You've had experience with this.
There is no expectation for rank or leadership by a full professor. For example, assistant professors are more than welcome to contribute and have been successful in the past.
I think that's another one too. If you look at the proposals that been funded, you will see a range of experiences in those teams. So fabulous PIs are fabulous PIs.
So somebody asked, does that mean a postdoc can be a co-PI?
The ability to be a PI or a co-PI is something which is established by an institution. It is not a question for NSF per se. If your institution allows you to be called a PI, then you can be a PI. You want to think about the time available and the possibility of commitment to the organization for the term of the award, given the generally tenuous nature of postdoctoral appointments.
There are also some topic related questions, and those may be more specific to the PIs, but there's some questions about assistive technology. And are they within the scope of this solicitation? There are others about how strong is the emphasis on multimodal sensors.
So maybe John could talk about multimodal sensors.
That's right. Hi, everybody. And I replied to a couple questions on the chat. I think in terms of the hardware, you're more than welcome to send me email, but just a quick answer. Think from the reviewer end, right? So if I have a single module on a sensor, that's not saying no, but if you propose specific model other than multimodal, think about make the novelty clear and clearly articulate. So from review perspective, it's competitive. So I'm more than happy to further elaborate if you send me email offline.
Okay. I'm not seeing that many new questions. There are more topic ones from before, but like John said, a lot of the panelists have been answering those lives. So I
see one here, Goli, that's probably worthwhile from an NIH perspective about ESI status. And so these, if this is funded on the NIH side and is brought over, it comes over as an R01. And so because of that, yes, this will impact the ESI status of the investigator.
Kind of between that NSF NIH thing, it, people are asking if the proposals will effectively be reviewed twice. Is that how the process, would you describe the process that way?
No, I wouldn't. So they're reviewed once and they go through the traditional NSF review with participation of the NIH counterparts. And so instead of having separate review for proposals that are selected by NIH, what happens is that during the review, at NSF, there's an NIH scientific review officer that is assigned to that panel that is there that provides guidance to the reviewers about the NIH scoring and what is necessary for proposals. And they sit in, they listen, they take their notes as if they would in a normal study section. NSF conducts the rest of the process, the initial sort of review and scores that are let out, as Wendy indicated, are all in the NSF format. You will not receive an NIH score. And then if your application is selected to come over to NIH, you will work with the program officer on the NIH side to reformat your application. And your application will go into a what we call a dummy panel. And so that avoids you having to have your proposal re-reviewed. And it's at that point when it's in the NIH system that whatever the score that you received during that NSF review, that will be put on whatever summary statement is released for those proposals.
Does this program have any correlation combined with NSF mid-career advancement program?
Sorry, Goli, I missed that one.
Does this program have any correlation or is it combined with the NSF mid-career advancement program?
So the NSF mid-career advancement program is a separate initiative. So if PIs are interested in the mid-career initiative, they should talk to PIs listed on that, program directors listed on that announcement. There may be overlap in some teams, but those are completely separate initiatives.
Would infrastructural projects that enable multiple research studies be interesting?
I think infrastructure studies that make other projects possible, if the infrastructure is not advancing fundamental science or engineering and is making in the science of it is in other projects, there are better initiatives for that. If you have a question about that, I suggest you reach out to the team and we can talk to you about where that might be a better fit. If there are advances required for the infrastructure, then it would be a fit. But again, just, you know, for the description of your project, the intellectual merit, the broader impacts, it makes us much easier for us to be able to give you better information.
Is the proposed team expected to have previous collaborations such as co-authorships?
It strengthens a proposal if there is evidence of previous cooperation and collaboration. We do ask for a collaboration plan, but this is it enhances the confidence that the reviewers have if, for example, you've either published or presented together or perhaps taught together. That's another way to get to know somebody.
Another question is about human subjects, and it's would the evaluation of the developed technology on human subjects, not clinical trial, be perceived positively?
Can you repeat that question? I'm looking at Steve's face, and we're the two of us are looking at you going, hmm.
Would the evaluation of the developed technology on human subjects, not clinical trials, be perceived positively?
So I was thinking human subjects in the other way. So so yes, people can do it. When you're doing technology that involves humans, you might be doing a decision support system. You might, there's all sorts of reasons why humans would be in there. Usability is an important factor. You know, if you're thinking about perception, you really want to know what people are perceiving. And you cannot do a randomized clinical trial, but you can do evaluations with people. You might do small randomizations of components. That's acceptable. There's all sorts of ways you can think about it, but you do want to evaluate your impact with humans, whether it's if you're trying to build something people will use, if you're trying to do something to improve function, whether it's somebody reading an x-ray, whether it's human behavior or what, you would want to see, do people use this? And if so, how does it work?
There's a couple of questions about the one pager, the one page summary that you mentioned about repeating the email that it needs to go to, which I think is on the page. And then if there's a time frame for that, like if it should come in a certain time to be seen, or it can they submit one anytime?
So you can submit one anytime, but if you're waiting till 2 weeks beforehand, it's a mistake. So probably February 1st is not a great day to first send, you know, one of my colleagues or I that one pager, get them out now. It will be helpful. The more time you have to think about this, I think the better proposals that you will do.
There were a few questions about different model systems, like does research in like mice, Drosophila. There was also a question before about other primates. Are those of interest to this program?
So I think those are ones, there's a range of responses here. We have animals in many of the projects. I think that's one where it's nice to send a project summary and let us think about it instead of, again, we try to answer on the fly, but often a little thought really helps. And this is a very smart group, so a little thought goes a long way.
The question of salary caps, of what NIH salary caps have been presented a few times, of how they should be included in the proposal. And somebody's asking if we could verbally address that.
So Wendy can build off what I'm about to say, but these applications come into NSF, so you need to address the NSF proposal side of things. And we're not going to get into what the salary caps are and changes in budget, because it's 300 total cost, and any sorts of modifications to fit within that will, if your proposal is selected to come over it to NIH, you'll work with the program officer to fit that in within the NIH forms.
I think Dana's point is good. These are an NSF proposals. So you should follow read our proposal guide and follow the criteria there. You can, if NIH picks up your proposal, the program officer there will definitely work with you. That's a good problem, not a bad one.
Speaking of budgets, I mean, since we are in COVID time, someone's asking if they should add an in-person PI meeting attendance to the budget or not?
I think we have no idea where we will be this time next year. So if you do not use that money for the PI meeting, I'm sure you could find another use for it. So I would suggest putting it in. And then if you don't need it, like this year, we're doing our PI meeting virtually. So, but it won't hurt to have it in there.
how about research into the ethical issues arising from the technology? Are those of interest?
So they could be of interest. I think, again, as Wendy has said before, without knowing more about the specific proposal and more broadly what you're aiming to achieve within that area, it's really hard to really say yes or no, this would fit, or yes or no, we would be interested. So again, submit your one-page proposals to the email address that Wendy referenced before, and that will be on the slides that will be disseminated after this webinar.
All right. There are some questions on the success rate and.
This is Sylvia. I had said there were a requirement for two NSF sciences. How about an NIH Institute as one of the two? I'm assuming what the question is that of the appropriateness of a specific domain for a given NIH institute. That's certainly appropriate. That is, we don't have a list of only acceptable health issues, but the requirement is two NSF sciences for advances.
Two science or engineering disciplines should be in here. So there is a question here about Amira 935. I suggest you, whoever that was, you should email Dana Wolf Hughes to ask her that, because that's beyond our capability in this webinar.
Okay. Are four fundamental science areas let me just pull the question up.
Goldie, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, I wanted to just pull as the questions moved around. Four fundamental science areas were listed in the subtopics. Is it okay to address two subtopics in the same science area, machine learning and databases, for example?
So I think those are broad areas of science and engineering across NSF. They are many, many different disciplines, many different areas of interest. So yes, that's entirely possible.
Should we take any, should we continue to take questions? We are approaching around 4 p.m., but.
Right. So I will say that all of the questions that we're answering here will be, we will take the themes out of these and put them in our frequently asked questions so that these questions will be available at a later date. The other thing I want to say, there's a question here. It says, consider in top-down order, which was the National Science Board, intellectual merit and broader impact criteria. And it says, is that also important? Yes, that is important. Those are all variables that are important to review. But the ones that we start with are the intellectual merit. What is this doing for science and engineering? And the broader impacts. What does this do for society? Those are the two criteria that we start off every conversation about a proposal on.
And I do know, Goli, you had before what the percent of funded applications are historically. And historically for both combined NIH and NSF, it's about between 11 and 12%.
Okay, yeah, that came up a few times. There are a couple of questions also about COVID-related ones. For example, if the proposed study involves human participants in the lab, do you expect an additional COVID-19 prevention plan? Previously, somebody else also asked that about it might be difficult to collect support letters to recruit subjects such as older adults from retirement community center assisted living due to COVID-19. Is it okay to involve or mention those stakeholders in the proposals without direct support letters?
One of my colleagues want to answer this one? All right, Scott, are you gonna answer this?
I could. From the NSF side, the official policy is that there's no requirement to address COVID-19 in a proposal. It's not gonna be a positive or a negative if you do. I am not sure what the NIH requires. I don't know if Dana wants to comment.
So I am not going to comment right now, but we can add that in the FAQ because my office doesn't oversee the actual awarding and management of grants. And so I don't want to misspeak.
All right. And I think Steve had a comment to make.
Yeah, in regard to the part of the question that had to do with letters of support from organizations that may be involved in data collection from human subjects. A couple of things there. One is generally you should know that the more evidence you have that partners are willing to collaborate and to help out, the better. But when you do include those letters, the PAPPG, what Wendy described as your best friend, the grant proposal guide, has very specific and strict guidance on the form of those letters of collaboration. And if you read that, it may reassure you that they may not be so difficult to obtain after all. They can only state that your partner is going to collaborate as described in the proposal. That's it. There are no details. There's no endorsement or recommendation for the project. It simply affirms that that partner is going to do what you describe in the proposal. So whether you have that letter of collaboration or not, you should describe in the appropriate places in the proposal the nature of that collaboration and what kinds of resources are being pledged.
A few other questions that we haven't answered yet were, is there a cap on the number of consultants that can be included? And will this solicitation be repeated? Is it handled as in NIH A0 and then A1 with an introduction page?
So there are no requirements on whether you have consultants or not, and how many you have, although these are not huge proposals. So you probably don't need a whole lot of consultants. You really would like a few team members who are really gonna get to the heart of this. Coley, now I forgot the other part of the question.
Sorry, I kind of put two questions in one. No, it was about the future of the solicitation. Will it be repeated and is it handled as
Okay.
Yeah.
So we cannot tell you whether it would be repeated or not. At this point, we've just released this solicitation. Be happy that you got three dates for this solicitation. That's as good as it gets. So that's good. And this is not treated as like NIH with, we do not do resubmissions. People can re-rise a proposal and resend it in, but they do not indicate it's been submitted before. It does not start with a letter, and that will actually hurt you in a panel. If you start with a letter, it says, this was reviewed last time and we've made these changes. They should be integrated into the proposal. If you do not get funded, you should make an appointment to talk to the program officer who managed your proposal and have a discussion about what parts of the proposal worked and what parts of the proposal didn't. We are all willing to talk to you about these things. So please reach out and talk to us before you, if you're going to try to revise a proposal and submit again, really think about that first.
A question about scientific areas. Can an area of fundamental advancement be physiology?
So the NSF sciences physiology is primarily in animals, and that's not consistent with the goal of this initiative. So if you're going to do physiological research on animals, I suggest you apply to the biology department or you apply to one of the, in NSF, many, I'm sure my colleagues in math have many proposals where the application is in complex biological phenomena. Bio has that, size has that. So there are many places a proposal like that could go, but this is probably not the initiative for it.
Is there a limit on the number of PIs and co-PIs?
No. Although I will say that the panels struggle when there is one PI on a proposal. It's the master of everything. And the master of everything is hard given how complex these areas are. It's hard to have all the knowledge that you need.
All right. Following Wendy's comment for resubmission, do we need to include the justification for resubmission in the 15-page project description or as a separate document?
What was the start of the question?
Following your comment about resubmission, do the PIs need to include a justification of resubmission in the
15? I said before, that will hurt you in a panel if you do that. So if you are going to, if you were on a panel with my colleague Wei Ding, who is the program manager of your proposal, and it didn't get funded, you're going to want to email her and say, I'd like to set up an appointment to talk to you about my proposal. You're going to integrate that feedback in the reviews. You're going to integrate that into your proposal. You are not going to mention this as a resubmission. That will hurt you. You don't want to waste your space explaining why you're resubmitting. What you really want to do is improve the proposal.
Is a list of the science and engineering areas on the SCH homepage? Where can PIs find that?
There is no specific list. If you look at the NSF website and you look at This is computer science, computer and information science, and computer engineering, math and statistics, and social and behavioral sciences. So if you look at each one of those pages, you will see the broad range of science that each one of those divisions represents. If you have a question, please email our correspondence email, and we can also clarify there. But if your disciplines are primarily advancing in the NIH area, then you're going to want to go to NIH with that award. If you're advancing something in math and statistics and it's in a health or biomedical area, that's when you come here.
Speaking again of areas of fundamental science, can these areas be two fundamental science areas be advanced by one PI and not by the rest of the team, for example, if they're medical doctors?
I guess it would depend on what it is that you're proposing to do and what the actual experience is of the one PI with the fundamental science area, as well as the other two PIs. I mean, they also, I'd like to say, don't have to be medical doctors. Like, it could be a PhD in a health-related science. Not always do they have to be clinicians. So again, are you putting together the right team to address the research question that you're proposing?
And so I think we're really at the end of our questions here. And again, people can reach out to us. The one question I want to say is somebody had asked how many of the 10 to 16 funded proposals will have NIH focus versus NSF. And the answer to that is they will, every single proposal will have an NSF fundamental science or engineering advance, but the health problem or biomedical issues that they're facing will be different depending on who, which institute or center picks it up. And even if NSF, if you look at what we funded, you will see such a wide range of topics. So we keep saying the criteria for both agencies is the same for this initiative. It is the fundamental science and engineering driving the questions. Or there is an application area that's rising questions, and it can be filled by this new science or engineering. So with that, I think it appears that we're running to the end of our time, and we've answered most of our questions. I think we're going to post an updated FAQ please, we'll post the slides too. Please feel free to email us at sch- oh, can we put that in the Q&A or somewhere? Oh, all attendees. It's sch-correspondence. I can't spell this. Sorry. All right, there we are. Please feel free to email us with any additional questions. We look forward to talking to you, whether you want, and if you're interested in being a panelist in our review, please send if you're an engineering, send my colleague John in ECCS both your CV and a note saying you're interested. We will, or you can send it to the correspondents. We love to have new reviewers, and we really look forward to seeing your exciting science, these exciting problems that you're answering, and we look forward to you all transforming the world. So, and I guess happy holidays, everyone, because it's a holiday somewhere at this point, so. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Okay. Thanks, Wendy. Thanks, Goalie.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
All right. Do you want to stop recording? Stop recording?
Yes. I think it was started by MEM, so I want to.